Welcome to our third segment of this afternoon's program. It's Sunday, the 6th of March, 2022. It is now 2:41 in the studio. I'm your host, Kieran Murdoch. On this segment, we'll be bringing you another discussion where we talk about the death penalty, this time organized in collaboration with Amplify Caribbean. We're going to head straight into our discussion, so I'm going to introduce the panel. Joining us here in studio, we have Mr. Kadeem Joseph. He's a United Nations gender advocate and youth activist with a passion for youth development. He's also a media consultant with over 10 years of experience in media. He's with the Red Cross Group Life. He works to promote voluntary blood donations. He, of course, is a radio and print journalist, as we all know him, news producer, host, health editor here at the Daily Observer and Observer Radio. Good afternoon to you, Mr. Kadeem Joseph.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
We have as well Ms. Ashanti O'Keefe, head and co-founder of Amplify Caribbean. She will be providing us with an overview of the initiatives that have been included as part of Amplify Caribbean's Grateful for Life campaign, which is being conducted with the support of the World Coalition Against the Death Penalty, which of course is funded by the European Union. Good afternoon to you, Ms. Ashanti O'Keefe, joining us on Zoom. How are you doing?
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for having us.
And finally, of course, we have on the line Mr. Pete Simaj McKnight, an attorney at law and litigator. His areas of practice include, but are not limited to, criminal law, civil law, and immigration law. He is also a co-host of the radio program called Life, Law, and Music, LLM, which covers different areas of life with a title, Law and Music, or with a little Law and Music, sorry. Good afternoon to you, Mr. Pete Simaj McKnight. How are you doing? Mr. McKnight, can you hear me? How are you doing this afternoon?
Are you hearing me clearly?
Yes, hello? I am.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you for having me on your program, and thank you for your listeners joining in today.
Of course. Ms. O'Keefe, I wonder if I could begin with you just to give us an idea, because we did organize this discussion in partnership with Amplify Caribbean and their Grateful for Life campaign. I'm wondering if you could just tell me a little bit about what that campaign is about.
No problem. I'd be happy to do so. So Amplify Caribbean is an organization that connects change makers across the region and provides a platform for the sharing of topics that these change makers are passionate about. And through the Grateful for Life campaign, we created a platform for discussion about death penalty, of course in partnership with Caribbean for Life and the World Coalition and funding from the European Union. And their overall goal is to obtain a definite abolition of the death penalty, a complete end to it. And so toward this campaign, there were a variety of initiatives. First, there was a panel discussion, which involved members, some of which are here today. In addition, there was attorneys Rosemary Reynolds and Nick Nicholas. We had a critical discussion on the death penalty, sharing perspectives and opening the floor to viewers to share their perspectives as well. The main event for the entire grant process was the campaign, a social media campaign, which involved an interactive process with conversation, games, quizzes, addressing misconceptions, focusing on wider human elements and parts of the conversation on the death penalty that aren't usually addressed in brief discussions. And so this was a pretty process, a lengthy process, but an interactive one, which is something that we tried to focus on. The art competition, the competition.
So let me bring in Mr. Pete Simaj McKnight to just ask him the question. Mr. McKnight, why would you advocate that the death penalty be abolished?
The issue really currently is whether or not it necessitates to be still present. As a member of the criminal bar and also one who has done international human rights, the issue of the convicted individual's right to retain their right to life as well as not to be subject to inhumane or degrading punishment. And from that perspective, I'm a strong proponent in relation to having an individual rehabilitated to society or where the offense is so egregious that the court can sanction necessary prison term limits, which would not give that individual the chance to reintegrate into society, to recommit or to reoffend on that egregious offense, which is more than likely the capital offense of murder.
And usually when we hear about discussions in terms of abolition of the death penalty, the issue of human rights comes up. Why is the death penalty a human rights issue?
It is a human rights issue as that the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that came out of the prospect of the World War II dynamic, where in which an individual should not be deprived of their right to life, regardless of certain or safe in certain circumstances. What has happened is that the colonial vestiges or the laws that we've had retained from the UK is that in the Offence Against the Person Act, someone still can be sentenced to death by virtue of being convicted of murder or treason. All right? However, even though an individual is convicted, they still have, or their right to life is still being guarded by the courts, as well as their right not to be subject to degrading and inhumane treatment is still something that is very much evident, because they're still under the protection of the Constitution, and the Constitution protects for those rights. And it is from the Universal Charter of Human Rights that we got the Bill of Rights, which gives protection. And so once the individual is within the scope of the Constitution and can be protected by the Constitution, should be afforded those protections.
Mr. Kadeem Joseph, what is your position? Well, I would assume, but what is your position on the abolition of the death penalty? What role do you think the media and the press play in the whole debate surrounding the death penalty?
I'm certainly a proponent for the abolition of the death penalty, at least as it stands on our books. I mean, it makes no sense because it's not practiced. And quite often we have these discussions about whether or not an individual who is aggrieved because someone commits a heinous crime, you know, we have these discussions about, you know, under what conditions a death penalty should be applied and not applied. But I don't know that those are discussions that we as people need to be having at this point in time. And I say that on several levels. One, if you look at it from a Christian standpoint, the Bible says, "Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord." So if we are indeed a Christian society and we want to tackle it on that level, then you have that to contend with. Then if you look at issues of just societal, how we look at death and life and death from a societal standpoint, then you have a question of what makes me or you, what gives us the right to determine who lives and who dies. There's this great quote by Terence, I can't remember if he was a philosopher, but can look it up, but he says, "The brute, the bigot, and the batterer are all the same," or that's the notion of the quote. And I think we also have to come at it from that perspective, that as human beings, we all have the propensity to do anything that another human being has done. It just requires the right, perhaps, the right potentiating events to sort of lead us to that path. I'm not saying that all of us can be murderers, but I'm just saying that as human beings, we all have the potential to do something that is heinous in the eyes of someone else. And therefore, with the right societal construct, we all could be put to death for one thing or another. And as it relates to how society or how media should look at the death penalty, how we cover the death penalty, I think quite often we look at these discussions from an emotional issue, and we know that in the media, if it bleeds, it leads. So you want to sort of put out headlines out there, put out stories out there that would generate buzz. And when you look at things as emotive as the issue of a death penalty, the loudest voices are quite often the people who want a death penalty to be imposed on one individual or another. And I think we run the risk of feeding into the loudest sections of society rather than the sections of society who perhaps may be in the majority on this issue of death penalty. I don't think most people in Antigua and Barbuda agree that the death penalty should remain on the books. I personally don't think so. But quite often the loudest voices are the voices that we hear the most, and it may skew the debate in one way or another because of how the media sort of covers these issues. So I think if the onus is on us as a media family to sort of look for context in how we report on these issues, and to also not only go to the same sources for comments. So it's not just looking at the prosecutors, but to also look at defense attorneys and to look at the families that would be impacted by the potential killing of another individual. You know, this individual has a mother, a father, could have children, could have other family members who would be impacted. And we need to sort of weigh the ultimate price of applying the death penalty to any one person.
Ms. O'Keefe, I wonder if I could ask you, I know internationally there's been a general move away from the death penalty. What has sort of promoted that? But of course, that's with the caveat that, sorry, my hand brushed the microphone there, folks. That's with the caveat that that's in certain countries. Certain countries love the death penalty, quite a few of them. But a lot of countries have moved away from it. But can you give us some idea of what the international thinking on the issue has been? I'm still muted, Ms. O'Keefe. I'm not sure if you might have heard
me. Sorry about that. There may have been a bit of delay with my internet connection. But I was saying that it is true that there are some countries, major countries, where death penalty continues to be implemented, such as China and the US, first that come to mind. But in all, there are 108 countries that have abolished.
Mr. O'Keefe, I'm not sure if you could still hear me, but your audio has dropped. We are experiencing some difficulties with the Zoom call. Our studio technician says he's going to try and give you a call, so perhaps we could work on that through that lens. Mr. Pete Simaj McKnight.
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, the question to you, in terms of the international thinking on the death penalty, in terms of why some countries have moved away from it. In fact, hold on a moment. Ms. O'Keefe, are you back with us? Because I do see you've re-entered the Zoom room. Can you hear us? Can we hear you?
Yes, I am back.
Oh, sorry. You could pick up where you left off, in terms of the international thinking on the death penalty. Ms. O'Keefe, are you still with us?
Well, I guess we dropped.
Yes, evidently we are having a very tricky problem with Zoom. I'm not sure who our internet service provider is, but surely I won't call
them. Or perhaps who her internet service provider is.
Yeah, we're going to try and give you a call because we're not really hearing you coming through, Kelly. Sort of dipping in and out. Mr. McKnight, the international perspective on the death penalty, some countries have abolished and so on.
Yes. Well, as I said, since the age of the World War II and the creation of several international bodies who are what you call purveyors or indeed safeguards for human rights. So we have, in our context, we have the American Convention on Human Rights Commission. We also have the European Rights Court, who interprets where violations of human rights have begun great travesties. If you look at the breakdown of the Soviet war in that time, the Cold War as well, the different movements from the degrade and inhumane thing of just killing someone by virtue of that, there's a justification. Also, I think across the different legal regions, they've realized that sometimes individuals have been wrongly convicted, or that the evidence that was mounted at that particular time, if it had come light in this modern day and age, or in this forward, or 10 years after, that individual would not have been hanged or killed. I think the protection and the liberty that is now afforded during this time, in this era, the 21st century, a lot of individuals have changed their mindset and their thinking in relation to how to treat with individuals who have been convicted for murder. There have been pronouncements by the courts in the law lords in the Privy Council who indicated that individuals, they did not believe that a sentence for death was an appropriate sentence in relation to the good application of justice being associated. So by virtue of a cultural shift, a social shift, and a more greater realization of the protection of individuals' rights not to be just snuffed away or just taken away just because previously that was the cultural norm, that was the acceptance. If you look back, we have Westerns, we have movies, we have books where individuals would just go to the town square, stand up, they know that it was basically a public thing to do on an afternoon time. They know that the person would have been hung on the gallows, they will stand up, and they know that that is culturally accepted, and that individual's life would have been snuffed out. And I guess because individuals have now moved forward to a more humane way of thinking, a more humanistic way, a holistic way of getting things done, and also being appreciated as a fact that not because an individual's life was taken away illegally or snuffed out, that means the same has to happen for this individual.
We have Mr. Shanti O'Keefe on the line with us. Another question to you, Ms. O'Keefe. I have a comment on the board here that says, in Antigua and Barbuda, the death penalty has effectively been abolished. There hasn't been an execution in 40 years, so isn't advocating for the abolition of it a sort of moot, a sort of a waste of time, the person is saying. How do you respond to that, the fact that we sort of, in effect, have an abolition of the death penalty or a moratorium, if you'd want to call it that?
I understand. I think that it is important for the death penalty to be completely removed, quote-unquote, from the book. And that's because any law that has been dormant, as long as it still remains a law, can be made active again. And we've seen that happen in the United States, and the terrible consequences that have flowed from, a resurgence in terms of the death penalty, in particular during the Trump administration. Recognizing that where there's power, it may be used in a variety of ways, notwithstanding the fact that it has not been used, that does not prevent it from being used in future. And so it's important for it to be completely removed so that that easy avenue does not remain in existence.
And coming back to you, Mr. Joseph. I actually forgot your name there for a second. Coming back to you, Mr. Joseph, I want to ask you, in terms of the issue of discrimination, it's often spoken about how persons perhaps from lower socioeconomic brackets are more often likely to find themselves subject to the death penalty. I'm not sure if that's true, but what's your perspective on that?
You see, I want to sort of borrow from Mr. Keefe's thoughts on why the death penalty should be removed from the books. There's a sort of social, there are social implications for having a law like that on your books. We are saying to people that it's okay for other members of society to not only cast judgment on an individual, which we always do, but to determine who lives and who dies, and to use a violent act to correct a violent act. In the grand scheme of things. And it comes all the way back down to the issue of corporal punishment. If we're saying that corporal punishment is not okay...
Sam just walked in the studio.
If we're saying that corporal punishment is not okay, let me flip it on his head. If we're saying corporal punishment is indeed a good way to curb behavior, then why are we not beating adults?
Which is something I actually advocate for corruption. I think if you were to put corporal punishment on the books for minor corruption offenses, that you would actually, we'd have we wouldn't have any talk whatsoever of corruption in Antigua and Barbuda at all.
So
especially if you make it like a summary offense that a magistrate can just, six of the best on the spot like they used to do in grammar school.
My argument, therefore, is... Whereas back in the day, we used to actually do this. It was a part of our books, a part of our legislation. If it still holds true for children, why can't we do it for adults? And I therefore want to extrapolate that to capital punishment. Where does it stop? How do we determine as a society? Again, and I sort of lost my train of thought there.
Sorry. But there's an issue. There's an issue with giving the state the power to
kill
people. Yes,
yes. And it goes down to how we embolden individuals with this level of thinking that it is okay to kill another individual because they've killed another person. It says a lot to society. It's almost a lightning rod. To individuals in society who may take the law into their own hands and say, it's on the books, the legal system, the judicial system is taking too long, I'm going to do it myself. We need to watch for how these these sort of laws inform society and inform how we do things as a society, how we react to things as a society.
Ms. O'Keefe, you wanted to come back in to add to this point?
Yes, and in relation specifically to whether persons from a lower socioeconomic bracket may be more vulnerable in terms of the death penalty being a sentence given to them. That is definitely true. And it is because of a variety of reasons, not only the discrimination that they may face, which Mr. Joseph had mentioned, but also because they may be less likely to experience a trial that is fair. For example, they may not be able to gain legal representation earlier in the, you know, criminal proceedings, because that may only come in a bit later when a trial has to happen. They may not have access to a quality lawyer or to expert advice, because, you know, they're just literally not able to afford it. You know, if there's a situation where there are certain circumstances that put them in positions where they're more likely to be harassed by police or to feel the need to act in a certain manner, which may make them seem more culpable. And so there are a variety of factors that may particularly affect them. But of course, it's not just those in a lower socioeconomic bracket, but also those in other minority or disadvantaged groups, such as women, such as persons with disabilities, such as children who in some countries face the death penalty. So, and of course, there are a variety of factors, and of course, race as well. So there are a variety of factors within the legal system, within society, that just place them at a particularly disadvantaged position. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with this whole idea that some persons who are proponents of the death penalty have, that, you know, only those that deserve it get the death penalty, in reality, that is not the case, both in relation to the crimes that they may be facing the death penalty for, and in relation to who may face the death penalty. You know, it's not that stereotypical evil criminal that some persons might have in mind.
And if I may jump in there, because I sort of missed that point when you asked that question initially. Quite often, when we have celebrities, individuals who are powerful and have money, they get legal representation that the average man would not often get. Not only that, they get a level of sympathy from the individuals within society that, again, the poor, disenfranchised, disadvantaged, whatever you want to use to sort of categorize these individuals, they don't often get either. They get a level of sympathy from even, say what you will, while judicial officers are meant to rule without bias, we have seen in other jurisdictions where a celebrity gets a lesser sentence compared to an individual with no name. And that's a problem. Even how media organizations report on these issues is also worrying, where if it's a heinous crime, we report on it. If it's a celebrity, we report on it. If it's the average man who committed a crime, they don't get that level of coverage that they may need to bring attention to the case, bring, you know, possible legal aid, things like that, that would ultimately help them throughout the course of the case. And that is an issue overall in how we tackle the issue of the death penalty.
Mr. Pete Simaj-McKnight, a final word. You can end us off very briefly. What would you want to leave us with, very briefly?
Well, the thought that I have is that the individual indicated that why are we still having it? Something being moot doesn't mean that it doesn't need to be further elucidated, because we have in our section 2, of the offense against the person, amended 2013, that whoever is convicted of murder shall be sentenced to death or to imprisonment for life. So it is still on the books. It is within the judicial officer's remit, where they do believe that this reaches the worst of the worst cases. It is the worst of the worst circumstances, where the mitigation, there's no mitigating factor, that an individual can be sentenced to death, albeit the last person that was hung in Antigua was in 1991, or the last person that was on death row was in 1996. It doesn't matter. It remaining on the books still has effect. Mm-hmm. It still has
an impact.
So it still can be implemented, mm-hmm. but whether or not it will be rather affected at in this point or in this lifetime, in the 21st century, it may or won't ever happen. But it still needs to be abolished or removed by legislators. So Parliament needs to look at it, to remove it altogether, and to be within the framework of consistent legal development in the region and overall in extent the world.
With that, we can end this segment here. I want to say thank you to all three of our guests this afternoon, Mr. Shante O'Keefe, the head and co-founder of Amplify Caribbean, Mr. Pete Simaj McKnight, an attorney at law and litigator here in Antigua and Barbuda, and also to Mr. Kadeem Joseph, radio and print journalist, news producer, host, and health editor at the Daily Observer. Thanks to all three of you for joining us this afternoon for this discussion.